time.
All right. Good afternoon. Thanks, everybody, for coming here. We're going to discuss exporting, finances related to exporting. We have Ashley Pond from Deschutes with us. My name is Richard Foy with EXIM Bank, Export-Import Bank of the United States. I'm going to ask Ashley some questions about how she started exporting, what programs they use, and maybe some troubles and success stories they've had along the way. We'll have some time for questions later on, I believe. We'll make sure that we have that. We allow for it. So we'll just start. So what's Deschutes Brewery's story?
So how many of you haven't heard of Deschutes, or do you know who we are in Bend, Oregon? Okay, so we were founded in 88, so in June we will be 38 years old. We're ancient in the craft beer business. We are still family and employee-owned, which is a big point of pride for us. We actually started in Bend, Oregon, which was at the time a really depressed timber town. Like, most of downtown was boarded up. Gary Fish and his father were in the wine business, and they decided they wanted to open a brew pub. So in 88, they went to the weirdest town ever because it was mostly boarded up, and they opened up this brew pub. Couldn't hire really anybody to work in it because there was nobody really in town. But they stayed tenacious and kept going, and here we are 38 years later, still with Gary Fish at the helm. So feeling very fortunate to be an OG in the craft beer business. I've been with the company for 10 years, started with New Belgium Brewing Company, also work with Firestone Walker. So have a lot of experience in this industry and took over export several years ago and have been managing the program here at Deschutes ever since.
That's great. You know, EXIM Bank, we're really focused on growing jobs. So I always ask companies, how many employees do you have now?
So we have two brew pubs. One in Portland and one in Bend as well. So including our brew pubs, we're, I think, just over 400 employees now. Salesforce is around 45 of us across the country. We're in all 50 states now. 2024, we rolled into all 50 states.
That's impressive growth. And so what are you known for? What type of beer are you known for?
Pacific Northwest. We are hoppy beer people. Fresh squeezed IPA. But also in the late 80s, craft beer wasn't really a thing. We sought the advice of a local distributor, and yellow beer was really the thing. They tried our Black Butte Porter and said, that is your point of difference. So 38 years ago, we brewed this Black Butte Porter, and it's still the number one best-selling porter in the United States. Not the biggest category, but it was from the advice of a distributor that we focused on a beer that was very different at the time.
Excellent. And what was the trigger to start exporting or start exploring foreign markets for you guys?
So Oregon's pretty close to Canada, and it made a lot of sense geographically speaking. We could just hop over the border and get beer there, and our team could service the territory as well. We had a bunch of team members in Washington, Montana, all across the northern borders there, and it made it a very logical first market to go to. And we found some partners, very key part of the process, that were very helpful in kind of getting us into what export is. And it's a completely different business from the business that you're running in your own breweries right now. It is fraught with its own challenges across the board.
Yeah, I'm glad you touched on that partnership and having strategic alliances. Can we talk about that a little bit more? What partners did you really lean on as you started exporting from a knowledge standpoint, making sure that everything went smoothly?
Finding the right agents all over the world is, you know, kind of the most important part. We work with the Brewers Association and the Export Development Program. Are any or all of you, some of you, members in Export Development Program through EDP? Not Yes, one, two. Yeah, cool. I'm not just saying this because Steve Parr is sitting in the front row. But it is an excellent resource for getting started. It's completely affordable. It's just a slight additional fee on top of your regular Brewers Association dues. But there's an entire portal that sort of holds your hand through the process of selecting a partner. It lists all the partners across the country. It goes through regulatory information that you need. The EDP team is always ready on hand if you have questions for them to help you out. So if you are considering export and you're not currently exporting, I highly recommend talking to them because they make it much easier. Trust me, it is very complicated.
Yeah, I agree. You know, when I speak with exporters, a lot of they have a variety of fears that they come across. One is, how do I even move the cargo? You know, how do I engage with these foreign partners? How can we vet the foreign partners as well? So, you know, I just want to mention that there are a variety of resources. Excellent that they have an export development program. I know there's some partners in logistics. Donovan's one of them, that they do an excellent job moving cargo. Some federal services that are available, also U.S. Commercial Service, they can help identify good markets for your product, help vet those distributors and importers, make sure that they're ultimately going to be a good long-term partner for you, and potentially intervene if there's a shakeup with that relationship. So I just wanted to touch on those things. So going back to Deschutes and your export journey, how many countries are you exporting to now? What are the main markets, and what reasons do you have for a particular growth market? Is it product? Is it partnership?
What do we look for in growth markets or in expansion?
Process? Yeah, that was kind of a compound question. So, what do you look for? You know, what helps you be successful? And what are kind of some characteristics of a market where you've seen great success over one that's been kind of flat?
So there was a lot of questions jammed into
That's all right.
One. We'll get through it. I actually don't know the total number of countries, but I can roll through it. Japan, because our partners are sitting over there in the corner. If you guys are interested in Japan, Nagano are amazing. Now I won't say anything bad about Japan. Just kidding. They're amazing. Really great partners. We also go to South Korea. We were in Hong Kong, Thailand, Singapore. So a lot out in Asia, Canada, of course, Australia. We are going to start shipping very soon to the UK. Lottie, watching
you.
UK coming very soon. Sweden, there's a monopoly in Sweden, so we submit tenders through System Blodgett. We did win one this year, so we'll be sending fresh squeezed in the next couple of months. Where else? Australia. Through Costco International, we've been making some Kirkland brands for Costco. We're now shipping to Mexico, Australia, Korea, Taiwan. So lots of activity there. We've shipped beer to Antarctica. We've shipped beer some wild places. Ukraine. Anna couldn't make it, but we shipped beer to Ukraine. So lots and lots of different markets. What do I look for? Amazing partners. Andrew and Akemi over there are perfect examples of amazing partners because they care so much about the quality of the beer. Cold chain is very important to them, providing fresh beer to the Japanese consumer because their consumer is looking for a premium product. They're going to pay a premium price, and if the beer falls flat, they're not going to come back. So finding a partner that really cares as much about quality as you do, I mean, think about it. It takes weeks for your beer to get across the country. If it lands and it's been warm stored, it's going to taste terrible before it's even hit the docks. You got to go through customs. So what's the point in doing it if you're going to do it that way? It's really for American craft brewers. It's about selling a premium product and the consumer is out there in different parts of the world that are looking for premium products and are willing to pay for it. If you're looking to just ship a bunch of volume without providing a quality product, it'll fall off. You also want consistency, right? If you're going to ship once a year, think about doing that in the U.S. You're essentially just pulsing in beer to an area. It doesn't stay on the shelf. It goes on the shelf. It comes off. You ship it back again. You're starting all over again with your distribution. So you want someone that's going to consistently ship your product as well, so the consumer knows you and knows it can rely on you, and it knows it can rely on the quality. Did I touch most of it, or did I?
Yeah, I think so. Of course, I'm thinking of, you know, more as you're talking. So it's interesting when you talk about ensuring quality. What do you look for with your distributors in terms of how much they can reliably sell? I'm sure that goes into the calculus of what you're selling them, right? If they don't have a market built for your product, then you want to shorten up that order, right? Is that...
We rely on them to tell us what they can sell, without going and traveling to the country. So I hadn't been to Japan until last year. Sorry, guys, you're sitting here, so I'm just going to keep talking about you. You're wonderful. I hadn't been to really any of the markets. I'd been to Canada, but I really hadn't traveled to any of the markets. And Japan was the first one I went to. And you can read a lot and you can talk to these guys a lot, but until you visit the country and start going to where the point of purchase, where it's being purchased, it's really difficult to understand the market. So I learned a lot by visiting them and them showing me around. They were my Sherpas every time I went out there and really showed me how everything works. It's certainly not impossible to go service a market without being present, but it really freaking helps.
Yeah, that's so true. And that's a key difference between beer and a perishable and other more stable products. We've seen where there's a distributor relationship, usually the more they can have on hand, the more they can build a market for the product and sell. But you have that other component, which is, it'll spoil. So you need to make sure that's fresh, very, very key. So I imagine that's one of the key obstacles, that and logistics, getting it there. These are the things that keep you up at night, I imagine?
Logistics aren't challenging at all. We actually are, we do X-Works with our importers, and so they manage really from our doorstep, except for when I was working with Costco on their Kirkland brands, and I've had to do every inch of paperwork that is involved with compliance, and it is a nightmare. I have so much more respect for what you guys have to do on the other end now. It is crazy how much paperwork is involved with some of these countries. But yeah, it's a lot of work.
Yeah, that's so important. So where do you think the opportunities are in the market now? And it's, you know, craft beer is going through a little bit of a change, but there are still global opportunities, maybe not China, as we heard, but other opportunities in the world. Where would you focus if you're someone new looking to export now?
Asia Pacific is still growing. Markets like Japan have a ton of American craft beer, but the Japanese consumer love American craft beer. So it is highly competitive. It's still growing. Other markets, Thailand, Taiwan, Singapore, still all have a ton of opportunity because there is a consumer that is looking for American premium craft. So I think there's still tremendous growth available there. We're currently looking potentially at Mexico. I think there's premium opportunity there as well. Who am I missing, Steve? Europe. So we are moving into the UK, which is obviously an amazing market. Lottie's right up front here. So we are moving into the UK. There are some great markets in the UK as well. If you want to get caught up in the monopoly in Sweden, it is pretty cool. They do have expectations of how the beer arrives, and they have expectations of the price point that you need to hit. It is a monopoly, so they're looking for a good price point for their consumer. There's a lot wrapped up in it, but there is a ton of volume opportunity there if you win a tender.
Well, I'm feeling a little left out, so let's shift over to Ex-Im Bank. When did you first hear about Ex-Im, and what kind of turned you on to us?
So it was right around COVID. Imagine that. It was a strenuous time for us all. Collecting money overseas is not easy. It's sometimes the biggest part of the job. Not with these guys over here. They're great. They pay on time all the time. But with some other countries, they're looking at the dollar, the strength of the dollar. So their terms might be coming up due on a payment, and they're looking at the strength of the dollar, and they're calling me asking me if they can wait a week or two to see if they can pay their bills. So that can be a bit of a challenge. And so we looked into it, and Ex-Im offer services. It's insurance to give us peace of mind. So if that does come up and we are unable to collect, we've got the Gestapo here to go in and collect. But we haven't had to use it. So it's really just kind of provided peace of mind. It was and is a very challenging time in beer, and it's just a nice peace of mind thing to have you guys on board.
Great, great. And I'll bring everybody up to speed on Ex-Im Bank. Ex-Im Bank is a federal agency. We're the official export credit agency of the United States. We have a few key programs that benefit exporters of U.S. product. One that we're discussing now is our export credit insurance. And what that does is basically we backstop your invoices. When you're working with importers and distributors, they usually need a cash cushion, right? They can't afford to invest in your product using all the cash on hand, so they want open payment terms, 30, 60, 90, whatever. Generally speaking, U.S. exporters are conservative. They don't want to take on that risk. They say, pay us in advance, we'll ship you the product. That can often be limiting in developing and growing a relationship with foreign importers. So we want to ensure that you're able to execute on the opportunities that are in front of you. We do that by insuring those receivables. If your distributor, not any of these guys, of course, fails to pay you, then we pay you, and then we work it out Gestapo style with with that failing party. It works out very well for U.S. companies because it also has the component for cash flow. We address the cash flow by including a bank on there. If you need to increase your borrowing base with your lender, an insured receivable goes a long way. They like insured receivables, so no advance money against those. So we deal with the, you know, sleep at night, getting comfortable with your distributor, that relationship. The CFO is happy, the sales folks are happy. So it really works well. And I'll get into that further, but I just wanted to bring you up to speed as we continue this conversation. So aside from the credit insurance, do you use any other Ex-Im programs?
I think that's it.
Okay. Yeah. We have a working capital credit program as well, which I'll touch on, but doesn't really apply here. And so from supporting your international growth, how would you think, say, Ex-Im has been in a partner standpoint?
They've been great. I mean, like I said, it really is kind of just a peace of mind piece. You know, it can be challenging to collect funds. You don't want to call on your partners and bring in the Gestapo to. You want to have good relationships, right? You want to be patient with your partners. You want to do the right thing, and that has worked with us. It just takes a lot of patience and communication. But knowing that you guys will come in, it does give us peace of mind in entering new markets and partnering with new folks. We have a lot of tried and true partners that we just know will take care of each other. But as we enter in new markets, it does give us that extra
Yeah, I think that's important. I mean, you have built relationships where you're kind of, you know them, you know they're good for it, they're long-term partners, but executing on those new relationships, I think that's where we really help. You build confidence in establishing that new relationship, right? Sending your loved product over and hoping that you're going to get paid. It's not a good strategy for business. So I'm glad that you used it and continue to use it. I'm glad that it's helped you grow the international and hopefully continues to grow that. As far as other resources that that the Brewers Associate Development Program goes, anything else that you wanted to touch on? I know we touched on a few of them.
No, I mean, it is a really tight-knit community here with the Brewers Association and EDP. You get to know the other members. You can reach out to them for support. You know, hey, who's your partner here? Are you dealing with this too? So the support network is here within the Brewers Association, specifically export development, if you guys want to sign up. I really can't say enough about how much is offered there. You are completely in a stranger in a strange land if you are starting up an export program right now. There's a lot of work behind it. Every country is completely different. Some of them are easier than others, and some are so insanely complex. And you just got to roll with the punches. If I knew however many years ago when I started how wild this was, I still would sign up for it. But, man, I've banged my head against a wall a couple of times just figuring it out. But it is a lot of fun. It does bring the joy back to the beer business, and if any of you were here 20 years ago, 15 years ago, even 10 years ago when it was wildly fun, you know, visiting Japan, freaking great. The consumers are genuinely super excited to hear about American craft beer. They want to talk to you. They want to get to know you. And it gives you that juice that you miss from the days of yore.
That's great. You know, so I'm glad that you use I usually like to put a positive spin on exporting. I do this with a smile, but maybe you can share a story or two of things that didn't go that smoothly. And maybe if you knew about a resource that was available to you, or, you know, a potential pitfall that you would do it differently, or the second time around you did it differently.
I guess the one that's slapping me in the face right now, and if I stop to think about it, there might be some better ones, but, like, going direct with Costco really punched me in the face, not having a partner to help walk me through all of the paperwork and all of the things. And in hindsight, you know, they handed me this project because we were working with Costco domestically, and they said, you need to handle international. And I was like, yeah, cool, no problem, no big deal, I got this. But you're not going through our partners. Costco needs to go direct. And I was like, yeah, okay, I'll figure it out. I tripped and fell a lot. There's still some beer I'm working on 9 months later to get out the door to Australia, to get out the door to Mexico, tremendous amount of paperwork in both those countries. So if I had that to do over again, you know, I probably would have gone straight to the EDP and been like, just tell me what to do. Instead I was like, I'm going to figure this out. I got this. And I was baby stepping through it with our buyers. And every step of the way, I was like, I'm on top of this, and just kept getting punched with more and more and more and more paperwork and more things I had to find. So, yeah, I guess I would reach out for help much sooner.
Yeah. I'm glad you said that, because so many people, and we have an experienced exporter here, still run into some problems. So I want everybody that's, you know, here that's exporting actively now or considering it to really look, sound the floor before you step. Look at the resources that are around you. The Brewers Association is a fantastic resource, particularly with the Export Development Program. And it, as I understand it, you have an open door where you can discuss things, right? This is a large organization that has a lot of experience doing a lot of different things. Some fell down. Some, you know, succeeded. Let's find the middle ground. Let's have the discussion and do everything successfully moving forward. So, I applaud the program that you guys have built out. It's a great resource, and thanks for sharing that. Mm-hmm. It's not easy to share troubling things. You know, you just want to put a positive spin like I do, but I appreciate that.
I fully got my ass kicked. You know, there are things like labeling that you have to do on your own, and you got to think about the size of the font, and just wild stuff. Every ingredient, and some countries, every ingredient, and where was that ingredient from, and do you have the certificate for that? It just goes around and around and around, and there's just so many different nuances. So I guess I would reiterate finding yourself the right partners as you're looking that know how to manage all of that and who will hold your hand and not push you into the muck like I was.
Yeah, especially with a Goliath like Costco. Mm-hmm. That's I give you a lot of credit there. So rather than me doing a deep dive into Ex-Im Bank, I want to just pause, if it's okay. Does anybody have any questions about what we've discussed? We should dig into a little bit more from the audience. Yes, Steve.
So you guys mentioned the situation where an importer doesn't pay and credit insurance comes in. Is there another situation where the Ex-Im Bank services can come in with the shipping container, like boat sinks, products lost? Is that qualified?
Yeah, for which one?
The you lose product en route to market because, let's say, the boat goes down and sinks.
Yeah, so that's an excellent question. So export credit insurance deals with commercial risks, so bankruptcy, insolvency, protracted default. These are commercial risks as well as political risks. So in the last presentation with China, he had highlighted some elements where goods were stalled at a port. There was government action, maybe a license change that prevented the goods from coming in. That would be covered by political risks. War, riot, insurrection. These are things, real things in the world now, right? That's covered by the export credit insurance. Cargo insurance would cover spoilage, you know, and if they have to, you know, scuttle containers to save a vessel, things of that nature. Physical loss or damage is covered by cargo insurance. So a good broker would help you put a policy in place, and I encourage everyone that has a financial risk for goods on the water or in the air, if you're flying it, that you seek appropriate coverage for both credit and physical loss and damage. Any other question? Yeah.
Are you exporting bottles or cans? Is there a packaging service? Is it recyclable material?
The first part of the question. Depends on the market. Some markets prefer bottles. Some prefer cans. We obviously all prefer cans because bottles are heavy and the beer travels a really long way. Cans also, I think, protect the beer a bit better. What was the second part of the question?
Some of the countries are further ahead of us. I think some of the recyclable, you know, is the packaging recyclable or not?
You know, I actually haven't come across any regulatory stuff with that. It's really kind of consumer preference is what drives that. And I do have markets that take both bottles and cans. Depends on the style of beer.
Steve?
Am I still struggling with what? I'm sorry. I'm still digging through my Mexico paperwork at this moment in time. It's just a lot of paperwork, and for me, we're a somewhat large brewery. I have to go to several different departments to find the answers to different things, procurement for finding out which raw materials, brewing for, you know, flow chart processes, finance on things related to pricing. So Mexico is a USMCA agreement, or that's, I think, what's taking a lot of extra time for us right now. Finance is working on a lot of that paperwork. But I spent a lot of time working on the artwork with Mexico, for example. I spent a lot of time working on the artwork and the translations and all of that to get everything correct. And I thought we were so close. And they said, now the real paperwork's coming. It takes everybody usually on average about a month to complete. And that was after months and months of jumping through hoops. So hopefully we get that beer out pretty soon. But yes, paperwork is going to be a constant struggle.
Yeah, over here.
Do you find that FOBs are high enough to manage? I mean, how are the markets? It feels like all the transportation costs obviously has a huge level of liability even here in the States. Is that something that you run into, or how do you kind of counteract that?
Finding the right price point. It varies by market. I will say this. Margins are not exceptional. I mean, we're selling a premium product, and we're shipping it all over the world. And then our importer has to make money as well. And then the consumer is willing to pay for premium beer. But, you know, in many of these countries, they're not buying six packs. They're buying beer by the can. So it's also slower. So everybody's making money in the process. When everybody's making money in the process, you know, the margins aren't going to be great, but you just work with your importer, right? You tell them what you can and you can't do. When I'm sitting down with importers in these meetings out here, I kind of ask them, what do you need your FOBs to be? What does beer look like on the shelf? What kind of margins do you need to take? And it's having just really candid conversations with them about their margins and your margins and see if you're a fit. You know, good questions to ask is, you know, yeah, what price point do I need to hit to be competitive with X brewery, right? So somebody you know who's in the market. So I want to be right around where Sierra Nevada is, right? For me, that's what I think of, sort of my happy place, maybe just slightly premium to that. And then they'll tell you, you know, what price point you need to hit. And it's a hard tightening conversation because it's never going to be the margins you want.
Given the excitement of entering into new markets, what keeps you pushing into new markets? What's the drive? When is enough enough?
When we've conquered the world.
Is this a missionary thing, or is it?
You know, one other rad thing that EDP does is they give grants. So if you're supporting the Brewers Association and you go and do all the things to promote American craft beer all over the world, they give you a little bit of money to help you get there. And that really helps a lot because those trips are expensive. You're talking, you know, $1,400, $1,800 for a flight sometimes, and you're talking about hotel while you're there. EDP is willing to fund part of that for you, and you pay a small amount of dues annually, and you, that's one of the perks. I personally enjoy seeing beer across the world, what's happening with beer across the world. So what's motivating is talking to others who are exporting in beer and hearing what they have to say and what markets they're successful in and what's working for them. You know, I thought we were in the enough category. We previously sold a lot of beer in Canada due to trade policy. We sell significantly less now. So we were just kind of looking for other markets that had potential. We found a great partner that ships to multiple countries. He's an exporter, actually, based on the East Coast. And he told us about some markets that got us pretty excited. And that's why we're rolling UK. So I think it's just networking, conversing with the people around you, learning from the EDP and... you guys do, what are they called, like studies on certain markets, and you publish those. They do market research for you, and they publish it on their website. And so you can see where what markets are growing and what has potential.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point on grants. There are the U.S. and states, they want you to export more. As a result, there's a lot of money on the table. There's grant money really across the board. I mean, you look into it. So there's the ability to attend trade shows and labeling, and all these things can be covered through grants, at least partially in some cases. So I'm sure the Brewers Association has a list of resources, and again, talk to your neighbors. They know of a grant. Maybe they won't want to disclose it because they want it all for themselves, but hopefully this is a good environment of sharing, and they'll give you some additional resources. So definitely look into the free money if you're looking to export. And so a question for everyone. I mean, we've heard some scary stories, some good stories, world domination. Is there any fear now from any of you guys that are attending this session, any trepidation of exporting? Anybody exporting? You're concerned about entering a new market? Anyone want to share? Yeah.
I mean, so we're a smaller brewery in Houston, and we're looking at expanding to the UK because it's an opportunity that arose. And I guess, like, the question that's constantly going through my brain is, looking at the UK, it's an alternate revenue stream. You know, the market in Houston is very competitive. We have 70-something breweries that are all rolling up in the same 10 bars. It scares me a little bit to look at international markets that, like, how are we going to square ourselves to? Because we're a 2,000 to 5,000 barrel brewery. And so that's my major hesitation, is spreading ourselves too thin and then it having an effect on our home market, just trying to chase these alternate revenue streams.
Yeah, have a reliable production to fill that market need, yeah? Worst case, it explodes, right? And it's, yeah, okay. Well, that's a good point. What do you say?
Yeah, I guess where I would start is if it's specifically the UK, you're not an EDP member, become an EDP member. But start talking to potential partners out there and ask them, you know, introduce your brand to them, like present to them, show them what you have to offer, tell them like what your pricing looks like. Ask them what the environment is like there and how much they think they can do. I think different importers are going to have different answers, and it's really a matchmaking process. So you really just have to find the right people who are going to help you look out for your business. Lottie?
You're doing a session on the UK tomorrow. Oh, great. Here?
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. I'll be here. So what does your due diligence process look like when you're doing market research for? Is it it's partner first, or are you looking at the environment of craft beer in a market first and then looking for a partner?
It's not the same as it is domestically because – you know, domestically, you kind of know where you want to go based on where you're located, based on the markets. You know, like I said, we've been exporting since 2009. So understanding what's going out there, I really have just listened to the EDP and other people who are exporting and telling me where their top markets are and understanding who their partners are and really networking and talking to their partners and then maybe expanding that search if that partner's not a match. But, yeah, it's really not been an active sort of search for the next market. It's kind of been something that's just happened through networking and talking with people within the program.
Nice, naturally occurring. That makes a lot of sense. All right, so I'm feeling a little left out, so I'm going to talk about XM Bank again. We're really small business focused, so I mean, I know we're working with a lot of small businesses here, and not only from a beer export standpoint, from a equipment manufacturing standpoint, we support the gamut. So I'm just going to go over at a high level a few programs that that kind of meet the needs of these groups. Oftentimes, when you're exporting, a company will need working capital to fulfill the orders, right? So we work with lenders across the country to put favorable terms together in terms of a working capital. Generally speaking, it's a credit facility that you can draw from in a case like we're talking here. So this is an export-focused credit facility that you can draw down, pay back based on your sales cycle. We couple that with our credit insurance program. Now, the Working Capital Guarantee Program is a guarantee for the benefit of the bank, okay, not for you guys. So this is a way to incentivize a bank, a lender, to lend to folks that are exporting. Typically, they don't want to do that. If you go to a bank and you say, hey, I'm going to export my product, I need working capital, you say, go down the street. But if you have a guarantee, we guarantee 95% of that loan to the 90%, sorry, of that loan to the bank. So if there is a default situation, we pay the bank back, right? So that's a great story for the bank. We all love banks. We want them to succeed. For you guys, though, that's where my focus is. I want to make sure that you don't default. And the reason people default on loans more often than not is because they don't get paid from their buyer, right? So that's where we have our credit insurance program. We backstop your invoices. So when you have to sell on open payment terms, which you will if you want to grow your international business, you can do that comfortably, right? You can do that comfortably because we're going to backstop at 95%. There's no deductible with our program, and the premium is pay as you go. So if you sell to a distributor this month, you pay the premium next month. If you don't have an order for two more months, there's no cost, no insurance cost incurred, okay? You ship again, you pay premium again, all right? It's very simple. No deductible, 95% coverage. And it's very inexpensive as well. Our multi-buyer policy has a premium of, for the 1 to 60 day bucket, I'll say, of 55 basis points. So on a $10,000 shipment, it costs, what is that, $55? It's very inexpensive to sleep at night, you know. It makes everybody happy. When you work with a broker, we have people work with brokers. This is not for the UK and Japan. Close your ears, rather. But our brokers, we send them a letter if there's a delay on payment. We send them a letter and say, hey, this invoice is still open, and it's backed by the U.S. government. And they have the full will and intent to collect on this debt, right? We send that to you as the exporter. You say, oh, geez, and you send that to your foreign buyer. Your foreign buyer generally gets nervous enough that that invoice rises to the top of the payable pile, doesn't actually end up in a claim situation. That's where you have the support of Ex-Im Bank. Now, before we get that, we also do a credit check on the foreign buyer to make sure that it's a good credit risk. So we act as your back office. And this is all included in the rate. We check out buyers. That's at no cost to you. So it's a very good program. Mm-hmm. It's a great partnership with us. We want you to grow and export more. That's our mission, is grow jobs. That's what I said at the beginning. Our mission is to grow jobs by supporting you guys to export more. It's not an insurance company that we're looking at, you know, profitability of each individual policy. Our success is your success, or your success is our success, whichever. So it's a great great tool to be used. Now, from an equipment manufacturing standpoint, and I don't know if we have any in the room today, but we have a medium-term finance program. And what that program does is a bank here in the U.S., usually the bank that works with the exporter, finances that foreign buyer. So if you're buying a $500,000 piece of equipment overseas, you can get U.S. interest rates and terms. Directly from that bank, we backstop that loan the same way we do working capital program. The exporter gets paid upon shipment, and you just move on, so you don't have to carry that receivable. All right. So those are a few programs and how they work and how they'll impact the people in this building today. So spread the word. We have a lot of empty chairs today, so I depend on all you guys to say, I heard he's a really great guy. talking about export insurance and working capital and medium term. I also have some little cards here that kind of talk about those three things. So feel free to take one. It's got my contact. If you want to just chat one day, give me a call. Do we have any other questions from the audience about my program or about exporting in general? Yes, sir.
We actually are for most of our markets, except for Japan. They take steel because they bring beer. They come back. So we do round trip with steel with them. But with everybody else, we do 20-liter PET kegs.
We're struggling with the draft piece of it because it's wildly inefficient for us to use it. It's all manual filled where we have automated pay line. We can do, you know, so kind of the stance we have taken is we're not going to
Yeah.
but also for other markets, if it's not a keg logistics or Microstar or Kegstar market, it's been limiting for us. So I'm currently trying to figure out a solution for that. Like China is an example of a market where those companies don't operate. We're not doing one-way kegs. So right now, I haven't found a solution for setting up here.
Yep. It's not ideal. We have to shut down the line. Reset everything, restart up the line, shut it down again. But it's not ideal, but it's the best we've got right now.
Yeah.
We weren't able to fix all the world's problems today.
No, definitely can't. But I bought some business cards if you guys want to reach out. Happy to answer more questions if you think of them later. What volume opportunity is there for export? Sorry.
Right. Yeah.
What's the threshold?
If you're going to enter into a market, what kind of volume opportunity is there really available outside of the Costco International program?
Really depends on the country and your partner and what you're shipping. And, you know, like I said earlier, Sweden is a huge opportunity if you win. Massive game changer opportunity if you win. Can be smaller quantities, of course, but like there is a lot of opportunity there. But similarly to building your business anywhere domestically, it takes time, you know. So if you're looking for a cash cow out of the gate, it's not there, you know. It's you have to build the business. You have to be deliberate about building the business. You got to think hard about your pricing, what you're taking to the market. Because there is a lot of competition out there. What's going to differentiate you? So every market's going to be different, and I know that's a horrible, shitty answer, but it is what it is. There's no gold strike out there, really, that I've seen.
So you don't really have a minimum threshold, though, getting into a market. It's more about whether there's a long-term opportunity there.
Yeah.
With a good partner.
You're in a relationship, long-term relationship. But go ahead, Steve. I want to hear what Steve has to say.
I was just going to add that. So last year, U.S. scrap burgers exported about 110,000 barrels. That was a very tough international trade environment. We were a brewery that produced less than 1,000 barrels a year. They just export 20 to 50 barrels. There's little opportunities here and there. We're part of consolidated shipments. It really depends on the markets.
That's good. What? I think I'm. Any other questions?
You're ready for a beer.
Oh, I'm so ready for a beer. But I gotta go. I'm gonna be here for Nagano here. I definitely want to hear what they have to say about my favorite market. And I would tell you guys they're my favorite market, even if they weren't sitting in the room. They're my favorite people. That's my Shimai.
That's great.
Sister.
Well, we have a booth. I think we're 2236. If you guys have questions that come up during the course of the conference, please stop by, say hi to us. You take a card or stop by, grab a card, we'll talk. I'll be around too, just making noise. So there's no other questions? I think we'll just wrap it then. Thank you
Thanks,
so
everybody.
Much for your attention and for your questions. I appreciate that.